This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Monday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course, SiriusXM Channel 158. Gil Alexander, Kelly Midland.
Hello.
On this Monday, post-first round now in the NBA playoffs. Post-first round NBA, post-first round Stanley Cup playoffs. You good?
Yeah.
How's your derby?
Oh, it was great. It was the a good four-minute watch by me.
Good four-minute watch?
I still have no idea where Chief Wallaby finished. Is he still running? He might still be running.
Chief Wallaby did okay.
Did he?
Yeah.
I swear to God, I have no idea where he finished. I know he wasn't at the front.
I think he was fourth, I think.
Really?
I believe so.
He was further up there than I thought then.
Don't hold me to that, but I think he was fourth.
I just ended up with the one and only to win bet, though, and that didn't work out.
Golden Tempo. Who, I'm going to say, was never mentioned one time by anybody.
I don't remember him. Yeah. I don't remember him.
Now, that said, though, I did very well in the Oaks, given the information all of our experts gave us, right? Because they all had meaning.
Did he win?
No, but he finished second, I believe.
Okay.
And they all faded Zany. So all my matchups were plus money, pro meaning fade Zany. So the Oaks was great.
Okay.
Nice. Well done. Didn't win the outright, but then the Derby was not.
That was the one you and I talked about kind of on Friday. It was like, all right, what are your real race-watching plans? And I was like, yeah, probably the Oaks tonight and definitely the Derby. I don't know how much outside of that I'll catch. I didn't even catch the Oaks Friday.
Kelly and I take no credit for any of the wins or any of the losses.
Yeah.
We're just following on this. Today, we will talk NBA playoffs. May wins. Well, that did not start out well. We'll talk about that briefly. Greg Peterson, all of his baseball bets this hour for this Monday. A little country clubbing. Golf and tennis, and Wes Reynolds will join us a little later on the show to discuss golf and more. I think Wes hit an outright this week, did he not?
Wes and I both, Cameron Young.
There you go.
Yep. Nicely got one home.
Nicely done, gentlemen.
Actually, in easy fashion. That was nice to me. I will take every golf tournament like that. I don't think most golf fans that aren't betting on it will take golf tournaments like that with six-shot winners, but if you're betting outrights, you'll take that.
Can we just review? We don't usually do this on Monday morning. We usually just go back to yesterday, but can we just go... Because when we left here on Friday morning, we had no idea what was in store for us in these NBA playoffs. But this was on the heels of that Atlanta Hawks game where they were trailed the Knicks by 61 on Thursday night, I believe it was. So Friday we had the triple header. Friday night, the Rockets scored 31 points in the first half against the Lakers. That was a low light of Friday night. They end up getting beat by the Lakers in six games. The Cavs Raptors game six, RJ Barrett hits that impossible three to win it at the buzzer where it bounces off the back of the rim, goes high in the air and falls in. People were comparing it to the Kawhi Leonard shot for the Raptors against the Sixers so many years ago. That one bounced four times on the rim. And still, like, we did like a full segment on that shot, how it was impossible that it went in.
Wasn't it more like the Halliburton shot?
Yes, this one was more like the
Halliburton. Everybody kept saying Kawhi, and I was like, we just saw Halliburton last year do this.
It was just the same team. That was the only reason why they compared it to that. But so that forced a game seven. And the other one, though, of course, the more famous one of all of them on Friday was game six between the Magic and the Pistons, where the Magic were, they were going to do this. They were up 24 points on the Pistons.
Mm-hmm.
They were less than a half away from moving on. And Jamal Mosley was going to save his job, and everything was going great. And then they did something that we could watch 1,000, 10,000. We could watch basketball games to the end of time. You thought the Hawks being down 61 the night before was bad? How about the Magic missing 23 consecutive shots from Anthony Black's three with 4:14 left in the third quarter to Paolo Banchero's bucket with 2:24 left in the fourth. So more than a quarter of basketball. They didn't hit a shot. They were 1 of 20 in the fourth, and all said and done, they missed 24 of their last 25 field goal attempts, did the Magic. They scored 19 total points in the second half on 4 of 37 shooting. Let me repeat that. They scored 19 points in the second half on 4 of 37 shooting. The fewest points of any half in NBA playoff history. Detroit outscored them 31-8 in the fourth, 55-19 in the second half. and the Pistons come back the largest by a road team facing elimination in 40 years. And the Pistons forced a game seven. And we know the rest of that story. But just in case you missed, by the way, between the Hawks' performance, the Rockets' first half, and that magic debacle, there's a great tweet which we'll throw up once we have
it. Yeah, it's coming in.
But there's been approximately 7,000 NBA/ABA playoff basketball games. Those three halves of basketball, Rockets first, Magic second. Oh, here it is. Chris Steed on Twitter. There have been approximately 7,000 total playoff games in the NBA and ABA history. Orlando, Houston, and Atlanta just accounted for three of the top five worst offensive halves in NBA playoff history within a 24-hour time frame. Houston's current shooting splits, he tweeted this at the time, 27-21-60, talking about percentages from the field, from three, from the free throw line. And Orlando just finished the second half shooting 10.8% for the field. We'll never see another outlier of basketball this bad in our lifetimes. That's what we witnessed, that 24-hour stretch. Just incredible. To put it in a historical perspective, how bad it was. And then we ended up with three game sevens. So that was a thing. Remember, hockey had six game sixes, basketball had six game sixes. We ended up with one game seven out of those six in hockey. Montreal on, was it nine shots?
Nine last shots,
time?
Yeah.
End up winning that game seven. Unbelievable. And then in basketball, though, we had the three because of these, you know, two of these were improbable results. Well, not two of those, but two improbable results. So we end up with Saturday, we end up with the Celtics and the Sixers game seven. Jason Tatum is announced out.
Yep.
And so Joe Mazzulla, who apparently was listening to this radio program on Friday morning, hear me just go off on him, saying, is there no adjustments? This guy's the worst coach ever. He can't have any adjustments to this team. All they do is chuck threes. He says, watch this, radio boy. He puts out a starting lineup of Jaylen Brown, Derek White, and then, get ready, Luka Garza, Ron Harper Jr., and Baylor Shireman. The last three of which went scoreless in this game, which is the only time in NBA history where there were three scoreless starters in a playoff game. They went 0-7 combined. Well, I didn't mean that, Joe. What are we doing? Someone called it Micah Adams, our old friend, Micah Adams, love from Micah. Sporting News. Yep. Micah called it a completely unnecessary gamble. And I agree. Like, what are you doing?
You could make a case for a couple of those. Ron Harper Jr. was like, Ron Harper Jr.? He played in 29 games in the regular season. That was it. Played in.
And all that said, somehow, the Sixers, who led by as many as 18, found themselves in a dogfight with the Celtics. In fact, they led the Celtics by one, 99-98, with less than 4 minutes to go. And the Celtics had not one, not two, but three possessions in which they could take the lead. They couldn't. Brown missed a three. Brown missed a pull-up. Pritchard missed a three. Finally, Maxey sprint to the hoop. They're up three. Brown misses another. Maxey sprint to the hoop. They're up five with just over a minute left. Hauser misses a three. C's get the ball back. Brown misses a three. White misses a three. You get the idea. Sixers win it 109-100. And my Spurs Celtics 125-1. As I kind of was indicating on Friday morning, I knew this was coming. Dunzo. As I mentioned, Garza, Harper, Shireman, the only three starters ever in a playoff game to go scoreless. It's incredible. Celtics, you know how we say we live and die by the three? Well, they died by it. 13 of 49 from three, 26.5%. Embiid, 34, 12, and 6. Maxey, 30, 11, and 7.
Yeah, so what? Every loss they had under 30% from three. Yep. Live and die by the three, like you said. I'm glad you brought it up. It was like I had gotten now excited. Like I had taken Sixers 40-1 with like a couple weeks left in the regular season, something like that. When Embiid was coming back, and then he gets the appendectomy, and you're like, all right, no shot. But I'm getting excited watching this game. You're like, all right, this Sixers team's really coming together, right? Like you're seeing all the pieces. But you're right. Like the Celtics at the end there made a push. It made a push, and there was a lot of missed open shots, wide open shots. Do you know how the most wide open 3-point attempts in the first round of the NBA? The Boston Celtics.
Yeah, brutal.
Oh man,
there was one sequence where Derek White had a wide open three, hesitated, and he missed. And who was on the call? Dude, was it Reggie Miller?
I don't remember who was on
it.
Call.
It was the perfect. He immediately said, "He goes, that's why you miss." Like anybody who's ever played basketball at any level knows that getting out of the rhythm there, right? It's like, what are you doing?
He had a brutal season, both regular season and post. It was very tough for Derek White, who I really one of my kind of favorite players in the NBA just because he's under the radar, such a good two-way player, and the shooting, his shooting got so much better when he got to Boston from three, and this year really took a hit.
Shaving off the hair was a great decision from him.
That's true. Yes, it was.
Just want to point that out as well. And then the two game sevens yesterday, there's really not much to say. I mean, Detroit just destroyed Orlando. Banchero, 38 defeat. Cade, 32 and 12 assists. Tobias Harris, 30 and 9. Jalen Duren, 15 and 15. We're talking points and rebounds. Pistons shot 51.3% for the field. They crush Orlando in game seven. Jamal Mosley loses his job this morning as a result. We said on Friday, as long as he beats Detroit, they can't take the job away from him. But they didn't do it.
Yep. And there were reports, the reports we had a month ago, where he was going to be out no matter what, and that it was him and Banchero both in the front office going, it's him or me. Well, Banchero stepped up and had a few big games.
Yeah, it's not his fault that they missed 24 out of 25 down the stretch in game six. It is on him that they looked so bad yesterday. One could make that argument. And then Toronto, they had a big lead over Cleveland. I think it was like 10 points in the first quarter. Mm-hmm. They had a 10-point lead in the second quarter at both the end of the first and second quarter, both the ends of those quarters. Cleveland made runs, and then Cleveland just blew them out in the second half, scored the first nine of the third quarter yesterday. They got the lead. It was a tie game. They scored the first nine. They got the lead to 19. They got it to as many as 22 in the fourth. Toronto never got it within 11. Cleveland wins by 12. They advance. Cavs out rebounded the Raptors.
Finally.
60-33. Just for context, most rebounds in an NBA game this year, 69. 60-33.
Welcome to the playoffs, Jared Allen.
The nice part is they're all clean. We haven't started the second round. We'll look at all the second round series prices next on A Numbers Game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network. You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. Visa Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with Visa Pro.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back on A Numbers Game, live from Circa Resort Casino, downtown Las Vegas. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin, producer number nine, so much more than a producer. Now, ladies and gentlemen, Kelly Bidlin tells me something on air that I have not heard before.
May the 4th be with you.
Oh, is that what it is?
That was it. That was literally all I had to say. That's all I had to say. Also, one of Dustin Sweetelson's best running Twitter jokes, because he'll for the next month, it will be like May 17th, and he'll just one tweet, May 17th be with you. It just pisses people off. It's great.
Are you fascinated by adults who love Star Wars as much as they do?
Well, hold on. Star Wars has had a bit of a renaissance, a bit of a reboot, you know, with all these new TV shows and movies and stuff.
Yeah, I'm not even talking about that. I'm just talking about...
No, you're talking about the guy 15 years ago before all the new stuff that was really into it.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a little odd.
A lot. Okay.
Like, some of the new stuff is good. I've watched it. I've watched a lot of it.
So, I mean, I always do this where I my brother's best friend was the runner for Star Trek, was the showrunner for Star Trek.
I forget what everybody
so was I was up. I always talk about this that I went because of that to three Star Trek conventions in a row, like popped into three Star Trek conventions in a row, and my arc was first year, oh my God, look at these Looney Tunes. Dressed up in full Star Trek outfits, asking questions of the show writers in season four of Next Generation, episode three, when so-and-so said to so-and-so, and the writers are like, I don't even remember writing that, you know? And so I was like, the second year, they were trying to like set a record for most people in Star Trek outfits in a room that got married or something like that. I don't know what it was. And I just remember by the third year thinking to myself, you know what? God bless these people.
Dude, they are...
God bless them.
I remember the last time we talked about this, because there was a Star Trek convention here in town.
Yeah.
I think it was a weekend when my cousin was in town or something. Whatever, we were running all over the place, and we ended up at the Rio. And remember we were talking about this, and it was like Saturday night, convention in full force. They had overtaken the entire casino. Yeah. It was all Star Trek, like Trekkies everywhere. They're sitting in the middle. They set up a screening in like the middle of whatever abandoned area of the Rio, because, you know, there's some abandoned areas these days. They just set up a big screen. Everybody's just sitting down watching it. There was like 500 people watching one of the Star Trek movies.
Yeah.
And then I ended up playing blackjack with some Trekkies for like an hour because I had to. It was beyond fascinating to me.
There were people who got together and got married because of their joint love of Star Trek. That was enough for their romance to, whatever they call it. And all I can say is, I finally came to the conclusion. I was like, what makes their vice any less important than what we love?
Absolutely.
Right? Maybe they look at us and they're like, God, can you believe these guys sit around and watch basketball and football all day long?
I am with you, though. I walked in and I was like, whoa, what is this? And then an hour later, when I was having drinks and playing blackjack with these people, I was like, respect it. Respect it.
Respect. Put respect on their game. Ladies and gentlemen, Wes Reynolds. I'm not sure if he likes Star Trek or Star Wars, but I know he had a golf outright this week. Wes Reynolds joins us courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. You can follow him on Twitter at WesReynolds1. That's the number one. Wes, good morning to you, sir.
Yeah, good morning, Gil. See, it's all subjective, though, because, like, we may not understand, like, the Trekkies and the Star Wars people, but they probably think that we're weird because we sit and watch sports all day. It's oh, my God, why would you do that? Like, why would you put yourself through that? Like, and sometimes I ask that very question, but Kelly did bring up the "May the Fourth be with you." You can only use it today, though, but you could use the NSYNC Justin Timberlake "It's Gonna Be May."
I hadn't seen that one yet, Wes. I still hadn't said, brought that up Friday. I was shocked I hadn't seen it yet.
First of all, for those who don't know, Wes did something very genius right there. Instead of saying "It's gonna be me," right, he correctly pronounced it "It's gonna be May," which for those who are very familiar with NSYNC know that that was a complete direction to say it that way. So that was just Wes with some low-key genius right there on that. Congratulations on Cam Young, by the way. You hit that outright. Well done, Wes and Kelly.
Yeah, it was nice to have an easy one. It seemed like anytime he would make a little bit of a mistake, he would just bounce back. And he was the class of the field. Kelly was aboard with him as well. And just went gate to wire. And you don't see that very often in a golf tournament, especially not in a big time signature event with a really quality field. And he was the class of the field that basically the whole time, played with Scotty all 3 days. And Scotty, by the way, finished second, third straight runner up for Scotty Scheffler on the tour. And, you know, Cameron Young was just class of the field, just had enough distance there. The fact that he was willing to call a penalty on himself when his ball moved on the second hole. Now those with Cam Young tickets are like, what are you doing, man? Just go by the honor system here. What are we doing here? But he did. And then he scrambled safe par, which he pretty much did all week, and to shoot 19 under, because I thought actually where Scotty finished around 12, 13 under was going to be the winning score. And he just, he conquered the blue monster, to say the least.
Got a tweet from Kevin Ryan. Gil, are we sure that Cam Young isn't the number one golfer in the world? We are sure that he is not, right? As long as Scottie Scheffler exists, he is not the number one golfer in the world, correct?
No, he's not, but he's darn close, to be honest with you, because this is the Cameron Young we've kind of been waiting for. We saw glimpses of it 2-3 years ago where he had all those runner-ups in these tournaments, including in majors, and just couldn't get over the hump. And then beginning of last year, end of 2024, kind of had lost it a little bit. It was like, oh, well, maybe this guy was a little bit of a flash in the pan. He had to go actually to U.S. Open qualifying the day after the Memorial, and he was in a playoff, one guy for five spots, and made it in to Oakmont last year at the U.S. Open. So that's how far he's come in a very short time. He finally wins that Wyndham, gets his first event, was the number one guy, I think, on the U.S. Ryder Cup team last year. He was by far the best player that we had on that roster. And now already with two really huge wins this year at the Players and last week, of course, at Doral and the Cadillac Championship. So you're finally starting to see, okay, this is the guy that we expect. I know on the broadcast yesterday when they were finishing up, Jim Nantz was saying, hey, we expect these guys are going to be dueling for many years to come, that being Cam and Scotty Scheffler.
We just had the Triple Crown begin with the Kentucky Derby, and I typically ask these guys, I should say, if there's a Triple Crown winner, who would it be? Or I ask Felica specifically, hey, the Belmont, who do you got in the Belmont? Because he's hit that before the Derby in years past with Taprit. I'm curious with you, do you think, you're going week by week, but obviously the PGA Championship, the U.S. Open, and the Open Championship lurk. Do you have in your head a golfer or golfers that you're like, I don't know if I'm betting them yet, but these are the these guys seem to be the horses for courses on these three particular tournaments this year. Do you have that internal dialogue going on, and who might those guys be?
Yeah, I do. Like, when I look to the U.S. Open, which, of course, is not the upcoming major, it's the one following there in June, like, Tommy Fleetwood strikes me as the U.S. Open guy, the grinder of something that's going to be really hard. We're only a couple under par going to win. Tommy Fleetwood, by the way, was the runner-up last time the U.S. Open was at Shinnecock Hills, 2-1 Brooks Koepka. Nahu's not in the Truist this week. He's in the alternate event at the Myrtle Beach Classic. But he's somebody I have in mind. The guys for Aronimink here in a couple weeks at the PGA Championship, you're not going to get very good prices on them anymore. Of course, Cameron Young would certainly be up there. Ludwig Aubert, Xander Schauffele, like these are the shortest priced guys, I think, for the PGA. But we will see. You know, it's a course that hadn't been played in a while. So when it was played, I think in the BMW Championship several years ago, and Justin Rose won, so he'd be a, certainly another guy to consider. But yeah, you try to map it out a little bit, but things change a little bit. Guys withdraw or guys have injuries, like Colin Morikawa has been battling that back injury. He's out as of this morning in the Truist Championship. So we're kind of waiting for the shoe to drop to see if Cameron Young was going to withdraw off that big win, yeah, which he still might, but he did play his college golf in North Carolina, so I don't think he probably ends up doing that. But yeah, you try to map it out or at least have guys in mind as best as you can.
Excited for the readmission of LIV golfers. Do you think there will be a seamless readmission into the PGA Tour of LIV golfers? If and when this is all wrapped up on the LIV side, are you excited from a handicapping standpoint for that, or does it really not matter to you?
I wouldn't say it would be a seamless transition, because I think, you know, some of these guys going to have to go through a little bit of a process where it's not like, hey, you're just right back out there. Hey, welcome back. Good to see you. Yeah. You know, long time no see. I don't think it's going to be that. You know, it's good to have him on one tour, I think, but it's nothing. Like, there's only a couple real difference makers at the top, the John Rahms and the Bryson DeChambeaus. A lot of the older European players, they probably just go play on the DP World Tour, because number one, you know, the Ian Poulters and the Lee Westwood, they can't win on the PGA Tour anymore. So might as well go on the DP where you're known names and, you know, your former Ryder Cup winners. So yeah, but there's only a few guys, I think, that really make a difference in terms of field quality to add to the PGA Tour.
Yeah, I mean, really, who are the guys? Rahm and who else? DeChambeau.
Yeah. I think would be another one. Dustin Johnson from a legacy standpoint, but he hadn't won in many years, yeah. So we'll see if he even has great golf left in him anymore.
Joaquin Niemann.
Yeah, Joaquin Niemann is probably like the biggest young name forgot about. You know, that just sort of like, what a decision that was for him.
Cam Smith, he's got comfortable fishing for a living.
Dustin Johnson was almost the best timing of all of them in terms of career about to plummet kind of thing. More with Wes on the other side. It's a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back on the numbers game, live from Circa Resort Casino, downtown Las Vegas. Gil Alexander, Kelly Midland on this Monday morning, first Monday of May. I just want to read this one tweet. This is from Todd at Canarsie Born 65. He says, I listen to a numbers game most days and not only appreciate the connection you have with your listeners, but I too feel a connection to your listeners. Now, if we can only mandate that Super Jerk must tweet the show at least once per day. That's right.
Except
the problem with that, Todd, is Tad Carnarcy Born 65. The problem with that is that most of his tweets are really not readable on the show. They go a little beyond the pale.
Also, in his like 7 years of being on Twitter, he still hasn't been able to figure out how to tag multiple people in a tweet.
Right.
So he tweets to me and Gil separately.
That's right. It's a problem.
Like the same thing.
Super Jerk, by the way, used to be the angriest guy in New Jersey and then the angriest guy in Kentucky. And then he just went with Super Jerk.
Just kept moving,
I guess. He went federal, I think, instead of state by state. That's what happened there. Ladies and gentlemen, Adam Berg joins us now, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. You can follow him on Twitter at Skating Tripods. Once again, his legendary Twitter handle. Adam, could you give us the origin of Skating Tripods again?
Yeah, sure. It's a now defunct beer league hockey team that used to play on back in the Cleveland area.
There you go. That's right. Skating Tripods. I won't ask for a deeper dive than that because I might get into it.
It's a good idea.
Yeah. Okay. Adam, baseball been treating you okay so far this year? How's it going generally?
It's actually been a little bit rough here so far this season. You know, obviously a lot of things have kind of changed with the ABS system. You know, you got an increase in walks now. Pitchers are, you know, it seems like they're trying to work the edges a little bit more, but at the same time, try to get in the strike zone a little bit more. So, you know, we're kind of seeing maybe some more barrels than we saw last year, but the hard hit percentage is still pretty consistent year over year. Just a lot of variance, you know, early on in the season where you try to play underdogs because everyone's just kind of trying to get into rhythm. But I mean, the Pirates are in last place in the NL Central, and only three teams in the American League have a better record than they do. Yeah. So just a lot of inconsistency, I would say, so far this season. And unfortunately, I've kind of fallen victim to it.
I brought that up. I don't know if it was last week, but certainly the week before I brought that up. The real headline, because we were going through the March, April stats, and I said to Kelly, I was like, you notice anything else funny about the top eight teams? Seven of them were National League teams. Do you make anything of that? Is that small sample size? Is there anything to that? That the National League is so outperforming the AL this year?
You know, I don't really know what to make of it, and I wanted to look this up because I feel like this has kind of been a thing. In interleague play so far, the National League is 93-72 and plus 60 in run differential. So I don't really know what to make of that. I know a team like the Reds, for example, that you know, they've been overachieving throughout the course of this season, but they have an excellent record in interleague play. I'm not really sure why that is. I truly don't know. But it is something that's kind of interesting here to start the season that, you know, the NL 93-72 in interleague games so far. It's a pretty significant number.
A lot of that has to do with sort of that meat of the NL Central, the Reds, the Pirates playing well, the Cardinals playing well, teams that you didn't really necessarily expect to start the way they have, having a really good start to the season, I think. And that, by the way, the reason that it's really even doubly interesting is that the Mets and Phillies have sucked, right, from the beginning of the season up until here in recent days. So that's what makes it even more stark. You're like, wow, if they were good, who knows what that difference would have been. What did you land on in Major League Baseball today?
Yeah, something I want to mention real quick here. I think this is absurd. I just kind of looked at this. The Detroit Tigers have played 21 interleague games already.
Jeez.
They are 11-10 in those games. So that's a weird number. The Reds 13-5 in interleague play. The Braves 10-5. So, you know, both of those teams there, you know, was that plus 13? So, you know, kind of accounting for a lot of that difference there between the two leagues. But I mentioned it already. The Reds have definitely overperformed this season. They are a team I'm looking to fade. They just lost their first game, their first one run or two run game of the season here in this series where they got swept by the Pirates. But you look at today's game against the Cubs, and this is going to be a really high variance game. Total's 11.5. The wind is blowing out. Going to be about 70 degrees at first pitch. Over the last 2 weeks, the Reds comfortably lead Major League Baseball in barrel percentage. And also, you know, they're up there in fly ball percentage too. I think they're second in Major League Baseball over the last 2 weeks in fly ball percentage. So on a day where it's good to hit the ball in the air at Wrigley Field, I think this is a little bit mispriced here. I know some money is coming on Edward Cabrera overnight and this morning, but I think this line is just too high, you know, based on what we're going to see in this game, based on the fact it's just kind of going to be a crapshoot, I think, because of the weather conditions. Reds in the plus 170 range. I think that's a decent look here, even with Chase Petty, not knowing what you're going to get from him. But Edward Cabrera is a guy I'm looking to fade right now. A lot of red flags in his profile. You can read my deeper dive over at VSiN.com about Cabrera here. But the other play I've got in this one is Nathaniel Lowe for the Reds. Six barrels over the last 14 days, five home runs, all five of his home runs on the season, a WRC plus of over 200 against right-handed pitching on the year here so far. Likes to hit the ball in the air. He's in the plus 490 range to hit a home run tonight. I think that's a good bet. And also in the 50-1 range to hit two home runs here in tonight's game. Again, wind blowing out, platoon advantage for him. Cabrera's allowed a lot of pulled contact in the air. I think this one's worthwhile. So taking the Reds as an underdog shot and also Nathaniel Lowe to hit a home run around 5-1 and to hit two home runs around 50-1.
I like the Nathaniel Lowe play. Again, when you have bets on these teams for 30 days or 30 plus days, You get to know the team sort of intimately. He was always a guy, even though, you know, besides Stewart and De La Cruz in the middle of that lineup, 4 and 3, I reversed them. But besides the 3-4 spots, that the weighted on base for the rest of those batting order positions was just terrible for the Reds for this season. Every time Lowe came up, it seemed like he did something good, including hitting the ball out of the ballpark. So I like that play. Reds at the Cubs tonight at Wrigley. Where else did you go?
Yeah, and I think real quick, speaking of Lowe's, although he goes by Brandon Lau, yes. You know, similar thing for the Pirates, where, you know, you add a veteran hitter, a guy who has professional plate appearances, you know, day in and day out, and it helps, right? You know, you talk about the platoon advantage aspect of it, but, you know, the Pirates, Ryan O'Hearn, Brandon Lau, these guys came in with a pretty young lineup, a pretty young team, and have been very impactful so far at the plate. So I think that's a really good thing for both the Reds and the Pirates here as we go forward.
Agree.
But we'll stay in the NL Central here. And Brewers first 5-team total over 2.5 going to be a play for me here today against the Cardinals and Kyle Leahy. So Leahy's a guy who was a reliever last year. He has 99th percentile extension, threw in the mid 90s. So as a reliever, that fastball was pretty explosive. As a starter, though, fastball velo's down about 2 miles per hour. He's getting tattooed on the fastball this season. He's also throwing more sinkers, too. I don't really know why. Maybe it's to kind of preserve his arm, try him out in the rotation, something like that. But a lot of fastballs, a lot of sinkers from Kyle Leahy, and lefties are pummeling him on the season here so far. And I think that the Brewers, we'll see if they want to put Andrew Vaughn in the lineup tonight since it's his first game back. They're going to have 7 or 8 lefties in this lineup against Leahy, who can't get lefties out. So I think the Brewers, despite being kind of banged up right now, I could see them scoring some runs here in tonight's game. I think something else to point out here is we've seen money come in on Milwaukee in this game kind of overnight and this morning. Their starting pitcher, Chad Patrick, 257 ERA, but a 426 expected ERA, 552 expected FIP.
Oh, man.
Usually when you see pitchers like that who have big differences between their ERAs and their other run metrics, money comes in against that guy. But today, money came in on the Brewers. So I don't think it's a buy on Patrick. I think it's a buy on the Milwaukee offense in this game. So that's why I played the first 5-team total over instead of laying that short price with the Brewers.
Yeah, we'll see how long Chad Patrick can keep up the overperformance here, starting with tonight's game at St. Louis. Those are the two, or is there a third you got for us as well?
Yeah, we'll stay in the Central, but we'll go to the junior circuit here, the American League. I wore the Guardians lid because I want to feel better about what I'm about to say here. but I'm picking against Cleveland tonight. You know, Michael Wacha throws a good changeup, and the Guardians don't hit guys who throw good changeups. I mean, we saw it last week against Nick Martinez, who really shut them down. I think he went 7 innings, very, very efficient on his start for the Rays. Wacha's probably going to do the same thing. You know, the thing about changeups from right-handed pitchers is that they are platoon neutralizers, and this Cleveland team is built based on their platoon advantages. They're going to lead the league in platoon percentage every year based on the lineup that they have, and Steven Vogt doesn't really deviate from it. So they're going to put a lot of lefties out there. Michael Wacha has been better against lefties throughout the course of his career, better against lefties so far this season. And also, boys, I don't know if we've been paying attention to this or not, but the Royals are 4th in weighted on base average over the last 2 weeks. This offense has woken up, and Cleveland's offense is still very hit or miss and usually miss. So I like the Royals tonight, laying a price at home at Kauffman Stadium.
Cleveland Guardians, our Guardians update, 18-17, just good enough to be annoying thus far. Sorry, Adam. Sorry to phrase it that way. I still owe you dinner. When are we doing it? For God's sakes, yeah. Come on.
I don't know, man. We got to figure out a time.
Okay. All right. Anytime, Adam. I don't want it to go the whole year, and then the Guardians are going to – I'm going to win the Guardians thing, and then it's going to sort of wash, right? Do we have a bet this year?
Yeah, you'd have two dinners.
I don't even know if we have a bet.
No, we don't have this year. Because I was down on them this year.
That's right. You were out on them. That's right. So you got it in perpetuity, whenever you want. Adam Burke, everybody, coming off the Derby guide as well, has a bit of a guide break for now, so he can rest a little bit, at least on that front. But all his stuff on the website at vsin.com. Thank you, Adam. Appreciate it.
Have a good one.
You too. Carl Sack. Killer Sports Challenge creator. Next.
A
Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Smarter bets start here. Last year, all year long with VSiN Pro. For a limited time, get our annual subscription, normally $240, for just $199. And when you sign up today, we'll throw in two extra months for free. Don't cost you nothing. That's 14 months of VSiN Pro for less than 50 cents a day with promo code PRO. Get access to our daily best bets from VSiN hosts and guests, real-time DraftKings and Circa betting splits, AI-powered prop tools and matchup analysis, 24/7 video and full show replays on the VSiN Watch app, plus all of our special edition betting guides for every major sport throughout the year. Head to VSiN.com/subscribe and use promo code PRO. That's P-R-O, PRO. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. You okay? What are you looking at?
I'm good.
All right. Donnie Miller on Twitter. Gil, how would you handle it if Adam decided to order just a bowl of soup when you take him to dinner and save the meal for another time? Nope. Not allowed. I'd be like, that's your dinner, Adam.
I believe that question's come. All right, this dinner needs to happen because I feel like that question's come up before.
That's it. You order whatever you order here tonight.
That was your answer back then, too.
Yeah. Kevin Downs. Oh, Kevin. Kevin said, my brother from another. Thanks, Kelly, for Cam Young. I bet you don't know my music, but you do know your golf.
Thanks. We tweet that?
Kevin Downs. He always texts me by saying, I'm a brother from another mother. Brian M. I don't know what that means, Brian, so I'm not going to read it. Jeff Levine. Kelly, first, there's no NHL uniform adaptation better than the Hartford Whaler annual one by Carolina, and you ditch that Daisy Cottage cheese for good culture. Go for it.
Hey, I agree. I agree with all of that.
Once again, Daisy Cottage cheese with one of the great mottos of all time. Only Daisy Cottage cheese will do. That's their baseline. We'll do, but nobody else does, so we're good enough. That's what I get out of that.
I got one from Jason Stark I got to read. He left you out. He goes, hey, Kelly, I think the Ducks abandoned the movie-style jerseys when Disney sold them, but I 100% agree. Mm. So, okay, that makes sense. That at least makes sense to me, then, why they're wearing orange. And I got another tweet that is for Orange County, apparently. But, yeah, 100% agree. Leisure, right, Jason.
Leisure suit Kobe. I'm a couple minutes behind on the live stream. Got to say, if it happens to be Colorado versus Carolina in the finals, someone needs to pull some strings getting them to wear the Quebec Nordiques versus Hartford Whalers uniforms like they did earlier this year. That'd be great. Remember when they were, what was the sport we were complaining about that we were doing? Basketball. It was the NBA when they were doing throwbacks during the playoffs last year. Was it last year or the year before?
Yeah, apparently we're calling for that now, the NHL.
I was like, stop doing that. Not in the playoffs. Was it Portland who did that? Somebody did that. Can't remember who.
The Whaler and Nordiques, man. That would be awesome.
Yeah, man. Carl Sack is not only the creator of the Killer Sports Challenge, he's also a man who moves markets when he releases NBA plays. He joins us now, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Carl from his place somewhere outside of Denver, Colorado. How you doing, Carl?
In Denver proper, actually. Oh, good morning, guys.
In Denver morning. Proper. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Has that always been the case? Yeah.
For at least the last 15 years or so. Oh, yeah.
All right. So it's Bob who's outside of Denver.
Bob is about 30 minutes south of Denver. Yeah.
Bob is outside of Denver. Someone else is outside of Denver, but Carl in Denver proper. Okay. Carl, thanks for doing the Killer Sports Challenge. We're all having a great time with it. Appreciate you, conceiving it. And, for the second year, we're all having, a ball with it. I see you though. You're still the guy to beat, man. I don't care what you say. You're still the guy to beat. What say you about that?
No, you are. You're up three on me with 18 to go here.
Zach is also the guy to watch out for in this.
Yeah, he finished, I think, second last year as well. So yeah. It's stiff competition this year.
JVT screaming at the radio right now because he wasn't mentioned. So he's in there as well.
Bro, I'm like Chief Wallaby. I'm coming for you guys. Just watch out, okay?
You're like Golden Tempo from
the
back.
I'm still coming, yep.
Golden Tempo from the back. All right, Carl, what about these series? First of all, what in the first round surprised you the most? Let's start there.
Oh gosh. Well, coming into the series, I would have said, no way does Houston lose, and then Durant gets hurt and that doesn't help.
Yeah.
I would have said no way does Denver lose. I think Gordon going down was big, but
yeah.
And then
Celtics.
Gosh, I Yeah, I mean, I guess that would have been the biggest one, actually. Yeah, is no way does Boston lose. I can't remember the last time there were this many first round upsets of this, you know, size, at least going into the first round.
Kelly and I were just talking about how, okay, we're excited to now start making second round picks. The Killer Sports Challenge, again, contest.killersports.com for anybody who wants to follow along. But we look at these, you know, some of these matchups, like tonight's two games, and we're like, oh God, I don't know how much I love betting into these games. Do you have a play in either of these games tonight? And oh, by the way, I guess this is the other question. Are you, Carl Sack, delaying your releases during Killer Sports Challenge days till after the deadline so no one can bite off your picks? Is that what you're doing? Yes.
No comment.
By the way, you and I haven't talked about this once. Of course he's doing that. I respect the hell out of it. It's fine.
By the way, when you did it last year, I said it to Fezzik. I said, look what Carl's doing. He's Fezzik, of course, in the arrogance of Fezzik goes, I think Carl's overrating what he's. I'm like, dude, he's doing it perfectly as he should. He should absolutely wait till after the deadline. So good on you for doing that, Carl.
The first couple days of the first round, I kind of went as I normally go. I'll send out some overnights and whatnot. And then, you know, I know who's on my distribution list,
yes,
and I'm seeing the correlation, and I'm like, okay.
Yes, you do.
I don't know if I can keep doing this, but I will say I think that tonight will be interesting because I've been listening to the show thus far, and Gil, it sounds like you're interested in the Sixers.
I am. Yes.
I am definitely interested in the Knicks.
Yeah, good.
I know it, I think Will came on as well, and there hasn't been much support for the Knicks, and maybe I'm not reacting as quickly to the Sixers as I should be and their performance and their, you know, gaining of health, but the Knicks really dominated. I had them highly rated coming into the playoffs, and then they really dominated that last series against Atlanta. I know it went six, but the four games they won all of them by double digits, one by 30, one by 50. And then the two games they lost, they both lost by a point. And one of those 1-point losses was a game where they had a double digit fourth quarter lead. And if you go back and look at the course of the season, fourth quarter is the next quarter. And so that was the shock, most surprising of them all to me. But I've got this Knicks team rated high. And then, of course, with tonight, they come in, you know, Sixers are on short rest. They're coming off a game seven. You know, the Sixers kind of got the monkey off their back and beating, not only winning a game seven, which Embiid and Maxey haven't done, but then also beating Boston, which they haven't done in the playoffs. So I think this is a little bit of a letdown spot for Philly. And I would anticipate I'm going to be putting the Knicks into the contest tonight.
Okay.
Carl, I thought this was going to be closer, like six and a half. I thought we were going to get a bit of a discount on the Knicks. I think the number's a little too big for me. I think I'm staying away tonight.
Yeah. Although now what's going to happen is because it's moving the way it is that the contest number is not going to be as good as the real number. So then I'm going to be like, well, should I really play this? I'm not playing the Knicks. Let's put it that way. But I'll sit it out. But it's
I hope you play the Sixers so I can gain a game on you.
Oh, okay. Well, now I'm definitely playing the Sixers. No. We're going to see. But a lot of it does have to do with where the static contest line is and where the market price is, and you don't want to get the worst of that also. Okay.
Sure.
Any feeling on the big Spurs spread tonight?
Well, I missed the last segment, so I don't know if you guys touched on the Shams report.
Yes, we did not. But go ahead.
Yeah, no, and I was thinking there was one of the Minnesota beat writers last night that said that he thought that they would not have made Edwards questionable if there was not a tangible possibility that he's going to play. And so I do think that there is, you know, at least a 50% chance that he plays tonight. Whether it'll be full minutes, how effective he'll be, you know, those are both big question marks for sure.
Just to clarify for folks, the Shams report is that Anthony Edwards,
participant at Timberwolves shoot-around this morning and wants to return in game one against the Spurs.
I would have finished that sentence, but Kelly's
sorry.
I finished my sentence.
Yeah, and the market moved a good point on that as well.
Yeah.
And then Dhonsamu, or whether or not he plays is a question mark. I think he makes a difference. I was really shocked by how well Shannon filled in for him in game
so
six.
So good. Yes.
Man, he could just get to the rim at will. But then again, and that's the thing with this series is Minnesota attacked Denver's defense. And with without Gordon, they could get anything they wanted in the middle. You're not getting that against San Antonio. It's going to be a completely different matchup. But no, I don't have a strong opinion on game one here. Obviously got to wait on the injury statuses. And I suspect I'm going to probably be sitting on the sidelines here.
Totals look about right to you for both of these games?
Again, depends who plays. If Edwards is out and Dhonsamu's out, then I might get involved with an under here, which is a little bit scary early in a series. But I'd struggle to see how Minnesota's going to score on the road here if those two guys are out.
Carl, always a pleasure. I look forward to what is submitted tonight, if you know what I mean. Thank
yes,
you.
Yes, I do.
Appreciate
Thanks.
It. Thanks. Carl Sack, everybody. KillerSports.com. Check him out there.